Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Robin Lineberger. Robin is the CEO of Deloitte Federal Government Solutions. Robin, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Roger.
Well, I'm looking forward to our conversation today, Robin. Today we're going to talk about the lump of coal that's under everybody's or in everybody's stocking these days right now. All they're talking about is sequestration and what's going on there. But first I'd like to just ask you a little bit about your background. I know you've had a long career providing support services and solutions to federal customers, and you also served in the military as well in the U.S. Air Force. Can you just give the listeners a snapshot of your background?
Sure. Well, I got started in the government technology and solutions business when I joined the Air Force as a lieutenant, and I worked with the AWACS program where I did technology and particularly software development. Continued my career at helping government organizations manage the development of technology and to drive innovation in their solutions. I continued to do that both in military career and then into civilian. And a few years ago was relocated to the Washington area where I started that work for civilian DOD agencies and have progressed through the career to now I have the enviable position of being able to manage work with about 7,000 practitioners who've dedicated their time and energy to helping the government deal with its most challenging problems.
Well, yeah, that's a great segue because one of our most challenging issues and something I hear every day from government contractors and just folks generally who are in the government is, what's going to happen with sequestration? Why are we in the situation we're in? And so I just want to, start with the basic question is, what is the federal budget situation today and, what are the problems we're facing? And that's a big question, so we can, peel that back and talk about it from various angles, but, have at it.
Certainly. Well, let's start sort of with the core, the simple view of this, which is our government currently spends more than we take in, and that our outlays are greater than the revenue generated, which over the last several years has generated a deficit, i.e., we owe about $16 trillion in cumulative to those that we've borrowed from to fund our government spending over those years. Fiscal year 12, we added about another trillion to that deficit. So we can we're continuing to add to that. It's about the fourth year in a row that we've added nearly $1 trillion to that. And so when we get out in the future, it really becomes questionable as to whether we can continue to spend at those levels and maintain some kind of fiscal discipline.
And it is a huge problem. And the fact that over the last 4 years the budget's been about $1 trillion a year, can you talk a little bit about, there have been some measures adopted over that time, but it doesn't sound like they've been too successful. What are some of the things the government has tried to do to address the problem?
Sure. Again, kind of at the high level, there have been over the last three-ish years sort of two milestone events that have tried to deal with this. One was the successful implementation of the Budget Control Act, which really, again, at the high level, addressed spending in the government, discretionary spending, and its objective and what was put into law is a slowing of government growth so that to slow down the growth in government spending, presumably to either let the economy catch up and generate more revenue to cover that or to start dealing with tax increases to begin dealing with revenue. So that was put in place, and then, as you know, you use the sequestration word. The president convened the legislature convened the super committee, as it was known, to try to come up with a solution that would deal with what we here call affectionately the three-legged stool, the entitlement reform, raising revenue, in dealing with discretionary spending and trying to work each of those legs independently to try to come to a solution that would put back in balance and even to some degree create a surplus of revenue so that we could begin paying down the debt. As we all know, the super committee failed to do that, and what they put in place as a motivator to try to get the super committee to conclude on some have called a grand bargain or a comprehensive solution was this notion of sequestration. Sequestration is a term used term of art, I guess, technical budget term, whereby at the middle of a year they will reduce the budget in January of FY of calendar year 13, which is midway through the budget year government 13, which would ask the president or tells the president, you need to pull back a certain amount of funding, put it in your desk drawer, and the government has to go and adjust their spending for the remainder of the year to enact those savings. That's kind of mechanically what sequestration is and how it came about. And it was thought that it would be something so onerous to implement that we wouldn't dare go there, hence the motivation to get the super committee to conclude on a more comprehensive solution.
Now, the super committee did, and you'll have to refresh my recollection, they as a group could not come to a consensus agreement, or did they have an agreement that they sort of presented to the president and Congress?
The committee was set up with a, let's call it a voting structure that, and I don't remember the exact number of percentage of votes that it would take for a complete recommendation, but they didn't meet that threshold. So it was, in a sense, they didn't conclude at the level of consensus that was sought in order to make that become legislative and go forward into the Senate and the House ultimately for presidential approval.
Right. Okay. So there was no consensus with that group, and as a result, no legislative package. So now, to sort of I guess avoid sequestration or try to mitigate it, you have, the president and House Speaker Boehner talking, and they've been talking all weekend. You know, can you talk about the current state of those negotiations and what's sort of the current state of affairs?
Sure, and realize that today it's one set, and I am certain that by the time they come to an agreement, it will be different than what we talk about today. So
sure.
This truly is the state of play today. And I understand that Speaker Boehner was at the White House again this morning to discuss this, but the state of play now is they're still trying to determine at what level they deal with each of these three-legged stools. They have a general idea of let's call it the discretionary budget reductions, which look a lot like what's already enacted through the Budget Control Act. So the focus area now is on raising revenue and dealing with entitlement reform. And generally speaking, the entitlement reform looks to be at how to change the way that they calculate GDP and inflation that indexes the growth in the payments in both Medicaid, Medicare, and Social Security. So the degree to which they either slow the growth, push back the eligibility dates, all of those are under discussion right now as a way to remodel the way that the payments would flow out in the out years, which then allows them to score budget reduction. In other words, less anticipated outlays, they can score that down. Then you have the revenue side, and they're currently discussing the degree to which the Bush tax cuts will be either sustained or to go away, in a sense. And sort of the bid and ask on that has been high-wealth individuals should go back and pay the higher rates in the 39% and change range, and that the other individuals, quote-unquote middle class, would continue to receive those tax benefits, and that the idea to generate on the revenue side, along with a future package of looking at other tax reform around deductions, both individual and corporate, to generate yet another set of revenue in the future. And so that's what they're talking about today. And as you might imagine, we've all heard they started out low, $250,000 and below, everybody above should be taxed. now to believe the Republicans or have concluded that they would be acceptant of those making $1 million in a year above to roll back to the Bush-era tax rates.
Okay. Well, Robin, right now we've reached our break, so when we come back, I want to talk a little bit more about sort of the motivations and the, you know, where the, what the parties are trying to seek to accomplish in these negotiations. But so when we come back, we'll be talking more to Robin Lineberger. Robin is the CEO of Deloitte's Federal Government Services Group. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
If you raise high the buff in blue, now's your chance to win prizes for showing your commitment to the Colonials. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now and start earning points for your likes, retweets, shares, check-ins, and more with GW Athletics content from GWSports.com and social media properties. Registration is free, and you can win special fan experiences, ticket upgrades, and buff in blue gear. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Is national competitiveness? How can the nation better compete in today's global economy? And what are the federal government's long-term cost drivers? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and the new IBM Center book, Governing to Win, with guests David Walker and Chuck Prow on a special edition of the Business of Government Hour, Governing to Win series.
Whether you're at work all day, running errands, or on vacation, why worry about the safety of your home and family? Trust Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else with an award-winning monitoring center. You can also trust Ackerman to save you money. It's just $18.95 a month with no cost to switch. Call today and get up to 3 months free of Ackerman's basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
Geico says, let's make life simpler.
Look, I'm all for modern conveniences. But ask yourself, do you really need a blender with 23 buttons just to chop an onion? At Geico, we think life should be simpler. So we make it super simple to save on car insurance. Just one click and you could be on your way to saving hundreds. Come on, people. Life doesn't have to be that complicated.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance. Geico says, let's make life simpler.
You need to buy something, but you don't want to make a mistake. So what do? Scour the web? Collect sales circulars? Ask your brother-in-law? How about this? When it comes to car insurance, Geico has a 97% customer satisfaction rating. I repeat, 97%. So make it simple. Just ask a friend who has Geico. Then click or call. You could make it 98%.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The proud, the Marines.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
I need some answers. September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question.
Could I Have Lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today I'm talking to Robin Leinberger. Robin is the CEO for Deloitte Federal Government Services. Robin, when we took that break, we were starting to talk a little bit about, the parties and what was going on. You mentioned the Republicans have apparently agreed to some sort of tax, return to the tax, Bush-era tax rates for those making more than $1 million. And I think where I'd like to go is just talk about the parties and what they each is trying to accomplish vis-a-vis these negotiations in terms of their interests or their programs. And it really does boil down to me this, the area of entitlements versus revenue, that, as you mentioned, the discretionary spending, I guess, is sort of the easier piece that they've moved on to these two hard pieces. So please, I guess start with the Republicans, since we were talking about them when we took the break.
Sure. So as most of us know, the Republicans have in general taken the position that we need a smaller, leaner, focused government, generally around collective defense, and that's how our government ought to be postured and focused on, and have concerns about the continued growth in providing services to our constituents, well beyond that, and sometimes draw the model as taken to extreme, you could end up with the issues that we're seeing in some of the social democracies in Europe, that the overcommitment in what we would call the entitlement areas or social safety nets have bankrupted the countries, their inability to generate the revenue along with those continuing growing commitments. And part of the challenges and the equations on that, at looking at that, is certainly the change in the demographic in the U.S., the aging that as the baby boomers move forward, we used to have a pyramid structure, if you will, where many more workers in than retirees. We're starting to move through a demographic phenomenon where we have much fewer people working ultimately than those that will be receiving the benefits of the social safety net, and the Republicans are concerned again about our fiscal position as the baby boomers sort of move through the system, if you will. Democrats.
With Republicans, that translates into ideas like raising retirement ages or eligibility, ages for Medicare and things like that. Is that, is that sort of trying to see down the road and in the balance sheet? Is that one of their goals in trying to address, entitlement reform?
Yeah, I think their goals are to slow the growth so that we can remain fiscally viable. And the things you talked about are techniques to be able to enact that. So there is an argument, if you will, that given the elongated or lengthening life expectancies, that retiring at 62, 64, 65, when that was put in to action years ago, that was really the almost at the end of the expected life or shortly before that, whereas with health, nutrition, and much more vibrant healthcare system, we've been able to extend life expectancy. So now you have people that are not only in the system, the numbers, but they're in the system much longer, and they're not built to sustain the revenue streams now. Life expectancy today, in the mid to high 80s, and for our kids, I have a couple of very young kids, 9 and 12, their life expectancy could be into the 90s. And so unless we really revisit how early you enter that system, it could become systemically problematic to continue to fund people for that long in the system. So that's one, is the eligibility. The other is the growth. There is an economic debate as to how you calculate the growth index and how the payments should go up. And so the Republicans are offering an alternative, what they call the CPI index, how the growth in those programs, the payments, the value goes up over time, again, to try to slow the growth of the expense side.
And, this is area, I guess, I mean, this discussion is kind of interesting. I have a 15-year-old, a 12-year-old, I mean, a 13-year-old, just turned 13, and a 9-year-old. So I'm in, so my kids are, the same as your kids. But, you know, for me, you know, I do know, you know, the my retirement age for Social Security, for example, is going up, you know, from the, you know, to 66 or whatever, you know, given my age. But I also see myself, given I have those young kids, and anyway, I would want to work. So I anticipate working into my 70s. And I don't know if this is a fair question or not, but just, you know, the retirement age for Social Security was raised at one point. And, you know, I guess there must have been consensus around that. Why does it seem more difficult this time around to try to look at those areas? Because logic tells you people are going to be living longer. Hopefully our kids are going to live, you know, life expectancy will be up into the 90s, you know, I hope for them. Mm-hmm. Why isn't that something that seems to gain any traction? And I guess this may go to this is my view, maybe it goes to the other side of the negotiations and what the Democrats are concerned about.
Yeah, you know, there's kind of two ways to look at that. I think the first is they're definitely in a negotiation right now, so that perhaps that's not an alternative that the Democrats want to put forward yet, because that's right. It's not the time in the negotiation.
Sure.
And then I think the other challenge is conceptually you can come up with alternatives. Those that are near retirement, we won't change it. Those that are long away from retirement, we can change it, because they all recognize that it'll be okay. They're not ready to go, you know, looking that close to retirement, and haven't positioned their savings and have positioned their expectations in that fashion. And then there's the people in the middle. And so you get this slippery slope that says, where do you cut that off? And as you start to articulate that range of cutoff, you start to get that particular voter base to start talking to the congressman and providing their feedback. So it is a challenge for the group that would be a little bit disaffected by that change.
Okay, so now I got us a little off track. My apologies. But now, okay, so with regard to the Democrats, what are they seeking to accomplish through the negotiations?
I think through the negotiations, trying to sustain the commitments that we have made to the American public. So the view is we've committed to Medicaid, Medicare, Social Security, and trying to keep those commitments and to make sure that everyone that has need and access to it gets to access the system and gets the benefits that have been outlaid there. So really this notion of providing the social safety net
okay.
for those that can't provide for themselves.
And so I guess the million dollar or the trillion dollar question, let's say, is how did the two parties get together and figure out, you know, they're doing the dance right now in terms of negotiations. How do you see sort of this? What do you think is how this would be resolved?
Well, I mean, without sounding trite, it'll certainly be a compromise. And let's say how it can't be done.
That's even better.
Yeah. It can't be done at the expense or of just one leg of the stool. The discretionary spending is such a minority part of the overall spending that you can't make up the deficit there. You can get some meaningful contribution, but you can't get it there. If you look at the entitlement programs, which are the largest total dollar outlay that goes out, and the way it grows, it doesn't take much past probably a 12th grade math to see the curve that says it just becomes
right.
unsustainable. So everyone recognizes that the growth in those on the current trajectory gets too large. And then we all recognize that you can't meet the majority or preponderance of the commitments if you take that much out of the entitlement, so then you've got to give on revenue. So it becomes a fairly quickly logical understanding. You've got to deal with all three of them.
Together, yeah.
Together.
And everybody has got to give a little bit, we hope. You've got to solve it some way or the other. So
that's right.
So, Robin, we do have to take another break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Robin Leinberger. Robin is the CEO for Deloitte Federal Government Services. And when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about, you know, what government officials are saying about it, how agencies may react to sequestration if it does come to pass. and you're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
MEADS, the Medium Extended Air Defense System, has passed its most important test yet. Recently, MEADS executed the first ever over-the-shoulder engagement of an air-breathing target at White Sands Missile Range. The test demonstrated the unprecedented 360-degree capability of the advanced lightweight and expeditionary MEADS system. Only MEADS can defend our warfighters against air and missile defense threats from any direction. MEADS has advanced capabilities and reliability that legacy systems can't provide. MEADS 360-degree coverage defends 8 times the area with less equipment than the Patriot system. And unmatched lethality. Defending more, costing less. MEADS, delivering on its promises. For more information, go to meads-amd.com. That's meads-amd.com.
Giving you the edge on healthy living, here's Mayo Clinic Medical Edge. Just like a car's engine, your joints need lubrication to keep the moving parts from breaking down. In the body, the most mobile joints, like the knee, wrist, and spine, get lubrication from the synovium, a membrane that surrounds the joint.
It makes the fluid and turns it over much as you would change the oil in your car. If something gets out of whack, one way or the other, then it can make excess fluid.
The result, says Mayo Clinic Dr. John Atkinson, can be a synovial cyst. These are benign, fluid-filled sacs, but that doesn't mean they can't cause problems.
If the cyst forms in the spinal canal where the nerve roots are, the cyst doesn't have to get larger than the end of your little finger to start compressing a nerve root.
It's just like a herniated disc, causing pain down the legs. Thankfully, not all cysts are this problematic, but when they are, surgery is usually needed. For more information, talk to your doctor or visit mayoclinic.org. I'm Vivian Williams.
The Federal IT Challenge is a series exploring the administration's aim to transform how the federal government purchases and uses IT, and a discussion around one of the biggest goals, reducing the number of federal data centers by at least 40% by 2015. During the show When Crowd Meets Cloud, Doug Bourgeois, Vice President and Federal Chief Cloud Executive for VMware, commented,
with the what I call the legacy method, you're only going to be able to get access to the expertise of the winning contractor. Well, as it turns out, you know, two other contractors might have had better expertise available, but due to cost reasons or their management processes or whatever, they didn't have the winning bid. With the crowd, you have the potential to tap into any and all resources who want to subscribe to that particular job. But you still have to manage that situation, but you use the cloud to do that.
To hear this show in its entirety, go to federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware. That's federalnewsradio.com, keyword VMware.
Today is the day to make the switch, to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Security is what they do. With Ackerman, you get the professionalism of the Washington area's only UL and CSAA 5-Diamond Certified Monitoring Center for just $18.95 a month. If you're paying more, you can switch for free and start saving today. Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
At some schools, your college student can now take a program specifically designed with the goal of changing the world. It's called the Grand Challenges Scholars Program and is based upon a 21st century wish list created by a group of some of today's leading technological thinkers.
Things like make solar energy economical, reverse engineer the brain, provide clean water to a billion people who don't have access to it on a regular basis.
Tom Katsoulias is Dean of Engineering at Duke University. He calls it
less of a list and more of a call to action.
At Duke and about a dozen other schools, the multi-component program is up and running. It boasts enrollment that's more than half women, unique for engineering.
This is a generation that craves changing the world, and they're responding to basically a program that empowers them and gives them the tools to do that.
To find out more about this story, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Robin Lineberger. Robin is the CEO for Deloitte Federal Government Services. And Robin, this segment, we've talked about the parties. We've talked a little bit about how, you know, what a compromise should look like in terms of the big picture. But, you know, if the compromise doesn't at least take place by, you know, I guess January 2nd, it is, then at least sequestration will start to kick in. And I may ask, give your predictions on what, how you think it's going to all play out, just to process wise. But first, I think we'll just let's focus on in this segment sequestration. And so my first question is, what have senior government officials been saying about sequestration?
We talked a little bit about what the politicals are doing and saying, so by that I think you mean in the agencies.
Just to clarify, I mean, you know, the people who are doing the real business of the federal government, you know, at the operational level.
So what they're saying is if sequestration were to act, it will be very, very challenging for them to implement. And it goes something like this, is that they will be a quarter through their year with only two-thirds of the year left. And that the budget cuts that they have to take are characterized in annual budget terms. So they have to take 100% of their cuts over three quarters of the year. That first puts them in a situation that it isn't like just bringing the level of spending down. They would have to take the level of spending down below even what they expect in the subsequent year and then move it back up. So you get this, you're already putting the government at the top line in an oscillation down and back up. So that creates a lot of inefficiency, waste, ineffective activity. Second is when sequestration takes place, the president will give direction as to how to take money off the table. And it really is a bit like peanut butter spread. It's 8-9% in the civilian and defense agencies, and it's down at the program level. So in the short term, the leadership's hands are tied a bit at where they can target the savings. If they're given basically take a little bit off the top, which may or may not align with what the strategic priorities are. So it's kind of a bad way to do a budget cut is just take, 10% off the top. And then it won't be until they either get congressional approval to reprogram funds or wait until government fiscal year 14 where they can begin taking their budget and realigning their strategic and fund their priorities so that those things that are higher priority like mission activity, working directly with constituents, those sorts of things can be refunded when you take the discretionary or lower priority programs off the table. So again, it creates some wasted effort and some challenges for the leadership between now and the beginning of fiscal year 14.
Yeah, it is, as you said, it's almost like a cookie cutter, a purely objective approach. It's 10% across the board cuts, going down to the programs. So there isn't there's really no discretion here to reprogram money or set priorities. I guess the priority for sequestration is you got to make these cuts across the board.
Right. So. And their ability to react to that on the day that it happens, certainly predicated on how much they've prepared for it, but it becomes sort of a slow decline, right? They're not going to be able to just take it down right away and then it'd be the same for the next, 9 months. It'll be a little bit in January, a little more in February. So when you get to the back end of the year, the cumulative impact of those cuts, the back end of the fiscal year, are much deeper than what they were the very first day, just because of the latency in enacting the change.
Right. It's been put off, right?
Yes.
So you got to catch up, right?
Right.
So how do you think, how well or how have been, because, I've heard also agencies are already reacting to and preparing for, although nobody says they are preparing for it, but and how do you see federal agencies reacting to sequestration?
Right. Well, it started at the end of their previous fiscal year. So we saw the government take full advantage of their FY12 budget to fully utilized the budgets that they had, as so that it would soften the early effect in FY13. And then what we've seen happen is that the first months of FY13, a noted significant slowing of procurement and outlays, not only compared to what happened at the end of fiscal year 12, but we have a history of being able to look back, you know, multiple years, and they've certainly slowed their spending, and we would say they're managing their cash right now so that if sequestration were to happen, they wouldn't have overcommitted. And they react much like even the commercial financial markets do. When there's uncertainty in the marketplace, people hesitate to take action until there's clarity. And as a result of that, government has already slowed down, if you will, during the first 2 months in anticipation or as a contingency for sequestration in January.
In that regard, I think we have seen a slowdown a little bit in government contracting, but can you talk a little bit about what the impact on government contracts, you know, will be, has been? And yeah. I know one of the areas that you focus on is intelligence products and services, and I'd like to get your thoughts, you know, especially what does it mean in that area?
Mm-hmm. In general, we've been seeing in the contracting side, there's been, again, in anticipation of that and a budget-constrained environment overall, because if sequestration goes away, it means it's going to be replaced by another law and very likely part of a deal to actually bring, you know, the spending down to much like the Budget Control Act is, which is, you know, modest to no increases for a couple of years, and then the government starting to grow back again. So in either case, it's going to be flat to austere over the next 2 years. So what I see in the market is there's significant rate pressure. So if there is a little bit of a benefit, the government's getting the benefit of some very competitiveness out there, people trying to win contracts in order to provide some platform or bridge through the upcoming months and years so they can reposition their business and be ready for when the market starts to turn more positive. So we're seeing that already. Next is we're seeing a slowing of, as we said before, the contract awards. Other contractors are reacting. We've seen a number of announcements in the paper, in the media, of significant reductions in force, layoffs, in part because their business is slowing, but also they're making a decision to be much more cost conscious. If the top line is going to shrink, what do you do in the middle on the cost side to try to manage to profit? That's particular pressure for those public companies and public reporting companies. So you're starting to see what they might perceive as capacity that they might not fully apply, starting to take that out of the system and tightening up, which all has the impact on the jobs.
Well, and Robin, right now we do have to take a break, but when we come back, we'll be talking more to Robin Leinberger. Robin is the CEO for Deloitte Federal Government Services, and when we come back, we'll talk a little bit about what agencies and contracting officers are doing with regard to taking actions that, you know, are impacting contractors in this environment, and, for example, low-price technically acceptable proposals. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
The Washington Wizards are back.
Spins, fades, banks, scores, and one. Okafor.
Up court to Crawford. No-look pass. Ariza. Stuff to it.
Crawford drives baseline. Whips it in the corner. Sheldon Mack for three.
Single-game tickets are on sale now. Call 202-661-5050. That's 202-661-5050. Or buy your tickets online at washingtonwizards.com/tickets.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
The Pentagon and Beyond is brought to you by EADS North America.
The Air Force has approved the formal start of pilot training on the A model of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter. at a Florida military base. This will pave the way for 36 expert pilots to be trained next year as instructors for the new stealth warplane. The news comes just days after the Pentagon signed a $3.8 billion contract to buy a fifth batch of F-35s. I'm J.J. Green.
Every day, EADS North America supports Homeland Security and Defense missions here at home and around the globe. Over land and water, in our ports and at our points of entry, EADS North America provides critical solutions and systems that protect our borders and coastlines. Our vigilance is unwavering. Our commitment is steadfast. EADS North America. Commitment defines us.
Honey, it's time to have that discussion with your daughter.
What discussion?
Really?
Hey, guys.
Honey,
what's up with you two? Dad, have you seen all the new cars with HD radio technology? It's amazing.
HD radio technology?
Go to HDradio.com. There's like extra channels, no subscription, Fords, Chevrolets, Toyotas, Mercedes, and Dad, BMW. Gotta run. Bye.
See, that wasn't so hard.
HD radio, now available from 28 different automobile brands and more than 150 vehicles. Go to HDradio.com for more.
If you are facing advanced illness or the end of life of a loved one, peace of mind is in short supply. Fortunately, pain-free comfort care is available from the Washington Home and Community Hospices, a not-for-profit organization with a holistic team of doctors, nurses, caregivers, social workers, chaplains, and volunteers. The team comes to you in your home or wherever you call home in D.C., Montgomery, or Prince George's County. For your peace of mind, call them day or night for a complimentary consultation at 866-234-7222.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m. right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Join FSEA and the U.S. Naval Institute for West 2013, January 29th through 31st in San Diego, focusing on the strategic shift to the Pacific. This conference and exposition features senior military and government speakers, as well as six panel sessions on budget, fiscal cliff, innovation, retention, cybersecurity, and China. Courses, career, and financial seminars, and Don CIO sessions round out the professional development offerings. Register today at westconfexpo.org.
Headed to Fort Detrick or the I-270 Technology Corridor, Federal News Radio can be heard crystal clear on 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. It's the same great station, just on an added frequency. Get the latest news about the federal government and government contractors. Hear exclusive interviews with the movers and shakers in the federal arena. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM or 820 AM in Frederick, Maryland. Federal News Radio, your source for federal news now.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Robin Lineberger. Robin is the CEO for Deloitte Federal Government Services. And you know, Robin, when we took the break, we were talking a little bit about, you know, what the market looked like and, you know, and how contracts are being impacted or procurement is being impacted. And I'd like to ask you, what, you know, types of contract actions do you see government likely to take? And one I did mention at the break is the use of the low price, technically acceptable evaluation approach.
Yes, well, we definitely see more and more of that, and I think there are two driving reasons for that. The first is the government some of the contracting officers have taken that approach, more of a commodity-like approach to some areas of the government to try to get some cost efficiencies. So I think it's tied more to a broader fiscal discipline than it is, say, a particular event like sequestration or other, but trying to squeeze more out of the procurement cycle. And, of course, there's challenges with that, which is, you can't overuse it because there's a range of products and services that the government buys, and applying that sort of one procurement technique across a range of services can have its challenges. I think the other reason they're looking at it is, as the market has tightened over the last several years and the opportunities are fewer, we are seeing more and more bid protests. And so that there's some belief that using the technically acceptable low cost makes it more insular from protest. In other words, protest proof, if you will.
Yes, yeah. That
the best value many times is hard to defend. And so we believe part of the migration to that is to actually be able to more expeditiously move through the procurement process so that they can get someone in providing the service, even if they've taken not an optimal acquisition approach.
And with regard to, in that area, I hear exactly what you're saying in terms of bid protest issues. And the ability to document and explain your rationale for a best value decision. And, it's sort of taking that issue off the table by going low price, technically acceptable. But I'd be interested in your thoughts. I'm concerned that, that approach is actually in the long run is going to cost the government more money. To me, there seems to be such a focus on the price differential, and getting what's believed the lowest possible price that, at a certain point, quality will suffer. The commoditization of sort of complex services, again, will reduce service and efficiencies for the government in the long run. I just wonder if that's something that you see as a potential risk in this approach?
Yeah, absolutely. I see that as a risk. That, again, the contract type wasn't built to do all manner of procurement. It comes from buying, fairly straightforward commodities. Things that the differentiation between pencils, pens, paper, things like that is nominal. And you're really looking for high volume commodity type activity to lose technically acceptable and low cost awards. When you move up the value chain to, say, systems engineering services with people that require, graduate, undergraduate degrees, PhDs, that whole different procurement approach needs to be used, or you will, as some would say, dive to the bottom is how do you take it's squeezing the value differentiators out of the system. And my concern is not only that costs more, what about innovation? We could drive innovation out. People not bringing their best and brightest ideas to the table because they're being asked just to provide what's technically acceptable.
I mean, that's a great point. There is a big risk to me when you stop and think about low price, technically acceptable approach for complex services that you will, in fact, reduce competition in the long run. And it gets to me, philosophically, you get sort of big picture questions. And, one of the things that I'm very concerned about is whether, in the current environment and that focus on price and government unique requirements as opposed to commercial solutions that we're moving to, or there's a trend towards a more closed federal procurement system versus open. And what I mean by that is that a closed system where it's really truly built about a process built around government unique requirements. A focus on this lowest price or the lowest common denominator versus an open system that sort of embraces innovation, commercial products and services, and looks for value and is able to articulate and make rational decisions on commercial approaches and techniques. I mean, I don't know. That's to me. I just wonder what your thoughts on that would be.
Yeah, I think so. There's a feeling that the pendulum is swinging back to a government unique procurement approaches rather than being open to commercial like buying, as we said earlier, the innovation and being able to bring in ideas and approaches from outside the marketplace. The more that we drive it that way and regulate it, it creates a higher market entry barrier for for new businesses as well as businesses successful in the commercial business already and migrating their products and services into the federal space. Each time we take a step to more commoditization, regulation, uniqueness, we limit the market participants, hence the innovation and the diversity.
So from your perspective, you know, with the challenges, are there other areas, actually, I should ask you, are there other things you're seeing agencies do other than low price? So I know we spend a lot of time on low price, but that's a big issue for me.
Yeah.
Are there other things that you're seeing agencies or the government doing with regard to their contracts?
Yeah, there's an area that's starting to formulate that, you know, kind of on a positive note here is around agile procurement and technology. You know, the problem statement here is that technology is beginning to turn so fast. It's upgraded. There are new innovations all the time. And if you're going to build a system and of any material size, how do you, as you begin the process and move through the process, be able to not only write the requirements, but also take advantage of a change in the marketplace, change in the technologies in real time? And so how do you create a procurement process that can be adaptive or agile, if you will, to the changing technology that can either operate agile from a speed perspective, that you can get faster turns on technology, or that you, on longer-term development, that you can modify and hook into it in real time to take advantage of what's in the marketplace? Because we have all heard the stories of large systems that are out of date before they even get fielded.
Right. If the approach of a more adaptive, modular, whatever you would call it, is a glimmer of hope. I mean, and as someone who worked in the government, worked on those huge, big, you know, kitchen sink IT systems, you know, as an attorney, you know, trying to advise folks, those things would, you know, collapse under the weight of the requirements as opposed to trying to focus on, you know, innovation and, you know, taking a step or a phased approach or modular approach or adaptive approach.
Right.
So there is, if folks are doing that, that's a glimmer of hope. You know, we're coming to the close of the show, Robin, and I did want to give you a chance. I usually ask this question, of the senior leaders, both in the private and public sector who work in the procurement world. You know, if there's one issue that, you know, you would like to see addressed or a challenge that you think that you would focus on as a priority in terms of fixing the procurement system, what would that be?
It would be having the agencies reinvest and support their contracting officers. That we had been for years in a cycle of disinvestment in that career field and that profession. I think we need to recognize how important it is, and reestablish its core capability, adding capacity as well as continue to develop and train them. I just think it's time to reinvest in that business.
Well, I agree with you 100%. If you invest in that workforce, you have better. And you have better execution, you get better deals. It's a win-win for everybody, you know, and they are fundamental to me to, you know, the ability of all of us to be able to support, you know, agency missions. I mean, the procurement system, that's one thing I love about it, is that you touch every agency's mission through that procurement process, whether you're a contracting officer or you're an acquisition professional working for a company. And, you know, making that investment is, it's a best value proposition from my perspective. So Robin, I want to thank you for being on the show. Again, I want to thank my guest, Robin Leinberger. Robin is the CEO of Deloitte Federal Government Services, and you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30 only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.